And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is adventure guides. Each of my guests is a veteran in his subject matter and is guiding us through the territory he knows so well. My next guest is leading himself and the rest of the world on a new adventure in communications. A co-founder of Twitter, will discuss his book on proper Twitter etiquette, 140 characters, a style guide for the short form. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation or if you have a question, you can call us at 639-0008. Dom Segallo prefers a short biography despite his many accomplishments. He's the co-creator of Twitter, author of the book 140 characters, founder of Dollar App, co-founder of iPhone Dev Camp, and the original merchant of Square. Dom is the CEO of Swagger Incorporated. He studied cognitive science at Harvard University. Dom received his undergraduate degree in English literature from Swarthmore College. He's married and lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. Joining us from the Bay Area, hi, Dom. How are you today?
Hi, Bill. Wow, what a comprehensive introduction. Thank you so much.
Thank you for being my guest today. Truly honored to have not only a thought leader such as yourself, but clearly somebody who is changing the way in which we communicate. So thank you for that. But let's start at the beginning. Tell us the story behind the founding of Twitter, because it's a story about being versatile in business. That's what I really like about it.
Right. Well, it's one of those stories that I find fascinating to retell because I learn something every time I tell it. It was in 2006, we were at another company called Odeo, and we were doing something similar to what we're doing now, which was podcasting. And this is back before podcasting really became big. We were hoping that it would become a marketplace. But the company and the marketplace didn't take off as quickly as we'd hoped, and so we were kind of forced to reinvent ourselves. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience of, having to, field a group of ideas and then choose the best idea from a group, but that's what we did. We had a hackathon contest, and, Jack's idea won. Jack Dorsey, the founder and creator of the service, he had the idea in his head for 5 years before he shared it with me and some other engineers, and we, latched onto it right away.
Well, that's
so
interesting.
It was just a brainstorming contest that kind of came to life.
And Jack Dorsey had this idea fermenting in his head for 5 years before he brought it out to the surface. Why then, and why did it take, why not 5 years earlier?
Well, it seemed like the various pieces were in place for him 5 years before he shared it with us. This was 2001. Web applications themselves were still very young. The pieces weren't together. In 2006, we had some of the pieces, the SMS service that the system was built upon, Ruby on Rails, which was our prototyping tool that allowed us to quickly build a web app just with a small team. And then the team itself, we had, look at the group at Odeo, Evan Williams, Biz Stone, Jack Dorsey, Noah Glass, myself, Adam Rugel, Tony Stubblebine. Almost everyone at the company then now has their own company.
Exactly.
And so they're each one of them entrepreneurs. And so he had this group of trusted friends who was able to finally share the idea.
Oh, it's an amazing story. It really is. Well, Dom, let me ask this question. Is 140 characters, which is the limit of Twitter, really adequate to communicate most people's thoughts, feelings, and experiences?
Well, yeah, I guess I'd sort of ask what you mean by most people. I think most people are not, they don't consider themselves writers.
Right.
And so, I would say to requalify that, I'd say a lot of people are writers, they just don't realize it. And what's interesting is that in my research and writing the book, I realized that the short format is the oldest format of writing. It's the thing we had before we had letters and the novel and, the article. We had the salutation, the farewell, we had the tagline, the decree, okay, all these formats, the kicker sentence, the intro sentence, the headline, these were all around long, long before we had the other formats. And so it seems like it's an anomaly now, or it seems like it's sort of changing the way we think. In fact, actually, it's fitting into the way we already think.
Well, that's very interesting. You are a student of literature, so you know that F. Scott Fitzgerald said, don't write to say something, write because you have something to say. And so a lot of people look at tweets and they kind of go, yeah, I'm reading a tweet and it says, my cat rolled over. Or television is bad today. Dinner was good today. Yum. I mean, is that really saying something? Or how is that, in what way is that expressing a person's, inner thoughts, inner desires, or even communicating a solid message?
Well, when I read those types of messages, I like to think about another story, which is what happened during the Iran protests and then the crackdown on the protests in their recent election. So you'll remember there was that election, and it was contested. The public had a bunch of protests, and then there was that crackdown. And some people were watching the violence and reporting on it live there in Tehran. And the state was trying to stop this. And really, there were probably about 10 or 15 people sending SMS messages, the occasional photograph, and really didn't even have access to Twitter, but it was getting out to Twitter, it was getting out to Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so we, as a populace, as a society, we set our location to be Iran and kind of hit those people amidst all of the cat tweets and the lunch tweets and the traffic tweets. And so someone's ephemeral message about how they feel or what they're thinking takes on a different meaning when you put it in that context for me.
Well, absolutely it does. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because really Twitter has been instrumental in what the media is now calling the Arab Spring, the uprisings in Egypt, in Liberia, and elsewhere. So you got to feel pretty proud about that. So what are your thoughts on the role that Twitter has played in these democratic movements that we're seeing across the Arab world?
I'm glad you asked that question. I don't take credit, but I take responsibility for helping to bring this thing to life. And so in that sense, whenever anyone is hurt or affected in any way in connection with the service, I personally feel affected. And so, yes, there has been some positive effects, but there's also been some violence and some activity that, even though the result was positive, every time I hear anyone being hurt or affected in connection to this thing, I feel very deeply personally affected. So I've been paying very close attention. And what it does, I wouldn't call it pride. I think pride is actually one of the, it's something to be avoided. But I feel a sense of purpose, maybe, or satisfaction that is being used for good. And this was something that occurred to me early on, and that was my first substantive tweet, number 35 on the system, which says, ooh, this is going to be addictive. And I realized that it has that power to be almost obsessively, compulsively used. And so I always looked, this is 6 years or 5 years ago, since then I've always looked for ways in which Twitter and these information networks are being used for great social justice, basically. And so the rise of the Arab Spring, I think, seeing some of the ways in which the citizens are taking control of information, that is very personally gratifying to me.
Oh, and as well it should be. My guest is Dom Segallo, who is one of the co-founders of Twitter. Dom, take this one step farther, because any innovation, whether it's the airplane or whether it's Twitter, can be used for both good and evil. I mean, an airplane can be used to transport you to see your grandmother in another city, or it can be packed with bombs and used to bomb a population. Same is probably true of Twitter. On balance, as you look back over the first, not even a decade yet, of Twitter usage, how would you weigh that technology? Has it been used more for good or more for evil, or is it about 50-50?
I don't know too many examples of it being used for straight up evil, just people trying to exploit it. I've seen people hacking into it. Those types of activities are pretty common on the internet.
Yes.
For a while I was pretty skeptical of the notion that Twitter is somehow inherently, positive or socially just, in that I try not to judge too early. But 5 years out, I'm noticing there's this pattern. And it has mostly to do with the types of people who are using the service. Because I guess, technically I'm not a founder of the company. Those three people are Biz, Evan, and Jack. But the 14 of us who are there at Odeo, we call ourselves co-creators because we were the original people who inhabited the service. We brought it to life. We were the voices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I focus entirely on the users and who they are and who is following me, not the numbers. I don't even know how many folks are following. It's in the 16,000 somewhere.
Wow.
But I don't focus on the number. I focus on who they are. And that to me is the lesson, right? It's about the people, and in this case, looking at the folks that I'm listening to and following these years, they're the right people. They seem to be the people who care enough to speak out, and actually more recently starting to listen more. And that's one thing we tend to neglect on the service. It's really great for expressing yourself, but it's also really important to listen. And it's our responsibility as educated, literate people to both promote literacy, but also to listen and read.
And I think that that is a worthwhile goal. My guest is Dom Segola, who is one of the founders, or one of the co-creators, as he puts it, of Twitter. Also author of the book, 140 Characters, A Style Guide for the Short Form. And Dom, one of the questions, there are a lot of questions that critics will pose, old dogs like myself, who kind of look at Twitter and go, hey, what's going on here? But I guess one of the easiest places to start is Twitter creating sort of a digital divide between both the young and the old, users and non-users, and the rich and the poor, people who have access to the technology and can use it, and those who cannot?
Well, that's a classic question, the digital divide question. My response would be that, just to think back on the original creation of the tool, it was built around SMS, and everything you write on Twitter fits into that 160-character limit of SMS, which is actually a human cognitive limit that we have. Around 155, it's been determined, through some anthropological studies and cognitive science studies, is our sort of limit of our brain in terms of the amount of information we can store and then retrieve. And so we, in the sense that there is a common denominator of short message service, which fits on any phone, whether it be a smartphone or a feature phone or just, you know, a pay-for-use phone, anywhere that the cellular service will reach suddenly becomes a form of internet. And I wouldn't, in Twitter specifically, but social networks more generally, I think connect us, and they connect us in a way that promotes compassion and at least awareness. And I can't say that it's creating a divide. I feel more that it's creating a bridge. And I've seen some of the oldest users on the internet getting excited about Twitter and writing using this tool, and I've seen some of the youngest people I've ever met latch onto it and make it their own.
Well, it's interesting that that the SMS format is available on phones, because recently we've had some guests on that say we now have about 5 billion phones, the smartphones or phones that were capable of carrying an SMS message in the world today. That makes it more ubiquitous than the personal computer, more ubiquitous than even television. So as a tool, you are in the sweet spot for sure when you talk about Twitter and the way that it can reach people. My guest is Dom Segola. Now, Dom, in your book, Dom, you talk about a lot of different things, but as a former literary major in college, one of the things that I found most interesting is that with the 140 characters of Twitter, there's a lot of ambiguity in what is said. Now, I come from an older school than you, and we were taught that when you write something, it helps you to clarify your thinking. 140 characters, even though it may be the physical limit of what our brains can actually absorb, really leaves a lot of room for ambiguity. And you address that in your book where you say, embrace ambiguity. So walk me through that, because as somebody who writes to clarify, how can I use the ambiguity that Twitter offers to help broaden my perspective?
Bill, I love this question. You've actually, it seems like you've read the entire book and understood everything. The last section is called Accelerate, and it's what you experience after you've gone through all the sort of evolution of writing in the small space. At some point, you get to take a style, evolve it in the direction of your choice. Maybe it's humor, maybe it's politics or news, and then you get to deliberately fragment your message so that it can reach a broader audience, or at least be more digestible. And so fragment is the name of the section you're talking about,
yes.
And ambiguity is the lesson. And so the reason I put that in there is at a certain point, 140 characters is not enough. You can't tell the whole story. And what I find engaging about poetry, what I find engaging about some of the best writing in the long format, is when I really need to think about what I'm seeing. And so I put ambiguity in there because the masters really have that ability to express something in a way that can be read in multiple ways, and have multiple meanings attached to it. And that's what I talk about when I say ambiguity. So, for example, on page 159, the tweet that I referenced was one of my own, actually. And it just reads, high tide, salt water for lunch, low tide, as if it were a poem.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I try to do is to talk about the setting and then think about, what does salt water for lunch, what does that mean? That must mean that he's, you know, somehow ingesting salt water. And at that moment, I was actually surfing. And when you surf, I don't know if you ever hit the water, you end up, you know, swallowing some salt water.
Absolutely.
But, you know, that to me, the meaning behind that tweet is just simply the passing of time, the activity itself, and the simplicity of the act of surfing.
And it makes it much more like a haiku than it does my cat just rolled over on the couch. My guest is Dom Segallo, and he was one of the co-creators of Twitter. Now, Dom, you mentioned it in an earlier answer, and I want to come back to it. We were talking about Arab Spring and how you can filter out certain tweets so that you can follow a string more carefully. Talk to me about filtering, because I think that that's very important with the barrage of information that comes in, even on a service like Twitter. How can you filter and follow something that keenly interests you?
This is another great question, and something that really didn't exist 2 years ago when I started writing this book. The story is that the chapter called Filter was picked up by a company here in San Francisco called People Browser, and they looked at the lessons. They realized that some of these tools were not in place at the time, and they went around and they went about building them. And so if you go to People Browser, it's People Browser, so there's no E at the end, People Browser. SR.com, you can see they built filters on top of Twitter to the exact specification of what's in that chapter. It's fascinating to me, and they've reached out to me a number of times, and I've consulted with them about how to make it work and how to make it effective. They built an entire business around this. And since then, since I wrote the book, Twitter itself has produced filters on top of the system, you know, in terms of searching, trends, promoted tweets, and these types of things that bubble up great content and great writers. And it was clear to me really early on, as I started to follow more and more people, that some of these great messages would get lost in the noise if I weren't careful. And so I started to become very deliberate about who I followed. And that's the first filter, just to be very careful about who you follow, because they will influence how you think.
Very
true.
Those
are the ones that take up your time.
Very true. Dom, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. It has been a delight. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, you can always find me at dom.net. And if you're interested more about the project and the book, it's 140characters.com. It's 140characters.com.
140characters.com. Dom, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. Hope to see you on Twitter. You can follow @Dom.
Will do. Take care, Dom.